Hey there. Glad you clicked on a little arrow and you're checking out my podcast. My guest was really, really fun this week. I'm going to talk to you about him in a minute. I told you in my last podcast that I was going to Rao's, this great Italian restaurant in New York City. I went. It was amazing. The guy sits down with you with a little pad and he tells you exactly what you're having at each course. Not what you want, pretty much what you're having, or, well, you know, they're Italians. We can be a little pushy. No, they sit down. There's no menu. They walk you through the four or five different courses. It was amazing. We had stuffed clams. We had mussels. We had meatballs. We had pasta, of course. We had lamb chops. We had dishes. We had forks. I ate everything. Anything that was put in front of me, I ate it. I went to the hospital to get all the glass taken out of me. No, it was fantastic. Had a great time. You got to check it out. Rao's in New York. I'm not doing any ads for him. I'm just telling you what my night was like. It was amazing. Greg Grunberg is my guest, actor in Heroes, Alias. He plays Trip Wexley in Star Wars, new Star Wars film coming out in November. This is really, really fun. He's so funny, so cool. Great conversation about him. He's best friends with J.J. Abrams. We talk about that. They grew up together. And talk about his acting and all the films and projects he's done. And also epilepsy. His son has epilepsy. And we have an interesting conversation about that and trying to make people more aware of epilepsy as a problem. Anyway, enjoy Greg, and check out Rao's, and also go to Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Paul Mercurio. Give me a follow. Say hello. Tell your friends about the podcast. Don't forget. All right. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy, Greg. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Welcome, first timers. My guest this week, a fellow baseball dad. We have a lot in common already. You know him from his really great acting work in Heroes, Alias, Star Trek, Snap Wexley in Star Wars, recently A Star Is Born, currently on Castle Rock, which you can see on Hulu, and it's Greg Grunberg, or we just became friends, so I can call you Grunny, right?
That's your nickname. Yes, you can.
What's up, man?
Free.
How you doing?
What I call you, Curie? What's your nickname?
You can call me Merc, or you can call me PM. A lot of my friends call me PM. You
know, PM.
You yeah,
I like that.
You know what I mean?
The man comes out at night.
Yeah. I like it. Well, somebody comes out at night. I'm not sure if it's a man, but somebody comes out at night. hey, man, it's great to have you on. It's great to meet you. I've really enjoyed your work and a lot of stuff. So
Thank you. It's really good to meet you. I've heard about you. We have a lot of mutual friends. So
yes.
This was destined to happen.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate you having me on because, you know, I mean, yeah, we talk about career, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, to be able to get the word out about my cause and all that stuff is just so important. So
oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to jump into that. And we both are talking off air about our kids playing baseball and being baseball dads and whatever. And what position does your kid play?
He plays, well, I've got two boys. One just finished freshman in college. He plays for LMU, Loyola Marymount. Yes, we knocked off Baylor. Yes, we knocked off UCLA, number one team. Anyway, I just want to throw that out.
Yeah, that's serious stuff.
But he plays center field, and he's, you know, it's such a crazy, wonderful world, you know, being a baseball dad. Mm. And you were just saying before we started recording, you know, how, and I agree, if I could do nothing else but just sit in the stands and watch my sons, you know, play baseball, it's just the greatest ever. I love it so much.
Yeah. And we perform, you know, both of us in different ways, act, and I do stand up, whatever. And so you think you get nervous doing that. I get more nervous for him him, you know, and I'm living through it a little bit, you know, and like, it's hard. It's great. And it's hard at the same time, you know?
I know. I just stopped. I mean, this, you know, our sons are playing college baseball, yours and mine.
Right.
So at this level, we should shut our mouth and let it happen. If it's not going to happen, if they're not going to excel, if they're not going to do, it's up to them. There's nothing we can do from the stands at this point that's going to change the outcome. Right. But I still find myself when I video, because I'll videotape his at bats still because he wants to analyze and watch them or whatever. Mm-hmm. And when I do that, if he gets a hit, you know, or when he gets a hit, I still hold that. It's so hard for me not to be like, yeah, come on, go, go, go. I mean, and it's so loud in the video because I'm right up there with my.
And the video is shaking. It's completely useless. You can't even use it, right? Like, because you're like.
And then there's the polar opposite side where he'll look at a strike three or he'll swing in, you know, or he'll whatever, pop out. And you hear me go, ah, fuck.
I'm the same way. My wife sometimes will get mad at me because, like, what I would do is I get so fed up, like, to keep myself from saying anything, I'll, like let's say he plays shortstop. So let's say he doesn't usually make an error, but, you know, people make errors, right? So let's say he misses the ball, whatever, the ball goes under his glove. I'll go, like, I'll throw my hands up, like I'll drop him down. I'm like, oh, Jesus fucking Christ. And I'll turn around, and I'll start walking toward the parking lot. And she goes, you can't do that because he's looking up to see how your reaction is when he just missed the ball. You got to just stand there and smile and clap. And I go, but that's fake. I don't feel that way. I can't do that.
But here's the thing. Dude, you tell your son constantly, don't wear it. Stop wearing it.
Yeah.
If it happens at the plate or whatever, you just go back, jog back to the dugout.
Right.
Don't, you know, and here we are wearing it as bright as possible. Yeah,
I know. I think it all gets to the fact that I think for me, it's like, I don't want my son to be hurt. Like, I don't want the world to hurt him. I don't want things that he does to hurt him. So I don't want him to feel bad. And so it's not like I want to be able to say at a bar, hey, my kid's number one. It's more like, I think for me, like, I just want him to be happy. And then I know if something doesn't go right, then he's not going to be happy. But then, you know, look, as my wife says, look, this is life lessons that you're learning through sports. And, you know, he's going to learn about disappointment. And,
yeah.
And I'm like,
no question. And by the way, how great is it that, I mean, we're very fortunate that our kids went into college in a fraternity, a built-in fraternity. I'm not a fraternity guy, but built-in group of guys that are all like-minded. They're all in the same pool. They're all in the same situation. I mean, the fact that, you know, he's got a team and you know, they're all friends immediately, and it just, they ingratiate him. They bring him in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been awesome. I'm sure this, you have the same situation.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And just all throughout his life too. Like, it's just to have that, a group of guys that you have something in common with, and then, you know, the coaches teach them things that I don't think we as parents can quite teach them. It's just, And I was a swimmer growing up. That wasn't my sport. But, you know, I think it's just all the same. And, you know, you're right, because my wife said the same thing. It's like, when he was going off to school, it's like, it's nice that he'll immediately have something. He's not going to just go in completely naked, so to speak, into this new world. You know, he's going to be with, like, his brothers.
But you were a swimmer just so you could justify waxing your body.
Well, that, and so I could wear the skimpiest bathing suit, the Mark Spitz red, white, and blue with the stars. Yeah, absolutely, man. I had the incredible physique of a pear.
You had that whole OCD thing about rinsing off in a shower. So you were like, look, every time I get out of the pool, I get to go to that little fake shower they have underneath the diving board.
Right. And then I walk around with this little square towel and I just squeeze it all the time, like OCD, like a bad Howie Mandel. I'm squeezing it constantly, like freaking out. And I used to love to swim. I don't know what it was. And I look back at the amount of time I spent in the pool. It was crazy. And, I swam at the boys club, and I grew up in Rhode Island, in Providence, Rhode Island, and they had this thing, and then we'll get into your stuff, but I'll tell you real quick. So they had this thing, because it was age 7th to 9th age, we were all boys naked swim.
No way.
I swear to God, you were not allowed to wear a bathing suit because they didn't want the lint from the bathing suit to clog the filter of the pool. Right.
Oh, sure.
And when I hear that, it's like, that's a lazy pedophile right there. You got to come up with a better excuse than that, more creative excuse.
Hey, I was in Paterno, okay, on HBO. I know all about this, my friend. No pun intended. We're getting into dangerous waters here. We should definitely change the subject.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
So I want to talk about your son having epilepsy and all of your efforts toward that. But just real quick, sort of, I had a couple of questions for you, but in your world as an actor and the things that you've done, I know you mentioned, you know, you were the driver in A Star Is Born for Bradley's character, and you mentioned in something that I saw that you were a driver for Joel Silver, who's a famous Hollywood producer, which kind of maybe gave you a little bit of prep to for the Rolling Stars. Well, what was that like driving him? Was it this classic case of like you're hearing deals being made or how the business works? How much did you learn from that?
Absolutely, 100%. You're right, and I got the job. So Joel Silver is most people know, but he's one of the biggest producers ever in Hollywood. I mean, The Matrix, and before that, he did Lethal Weapon and Die Hard, and he was actually a driver for it. And another incredible producer named Larry Gordon, which I found out when I was driving Joel. But Joel had this reputation, and still does, of being really tough on people, and you know, he kind of used fear, and not on purpose. He just his personality, you know. But he was so brilliant in producing a movie, like getting a movie made, and you know. It's impossible to get a movie made. Those movies were the toughest, the biggest budgets. I mean, the pressure is incredible. Anyway, I get this job to work for him and be his driver. And, you know, under the auspices of, you have no ambition in being in the business, right? And I was like, no. Meanwhile, you know, he just wanted a driver, a driver. I grew up in Los Angeles. Right. I knew every back road, every alley, every shortcut. So I was the best, and he needed to get from one set to the other, from one meeting to the other, from Warner Brothers, whatever. Yeah. I have stories and stories, but all of them, you know, you would expect somebody's like, oh, he must have been into, you know, girls and drugs and alcohol. Not at all. This was a brilliant, like hardest working producer I've ever met. Never stopped working. Mm. But you know, shouted. I mean, that was just his style. Mm. Not something that I was into at all. But yeah, I found myself at one time driving on Mulholland, which is famous, you know, the ridge between the valley and the city in LA. You're very familiar with it, right? But it's precarious. It's like if you don't watch where you're going, you can go off the cliff and right. You know, everybody dies.
Right.
I'm driving an SUV with, and I'm trying to remember everybody, but Joel is in the car. Cindy Crawford, Madonna, Bruce Willis, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, all in the same car. I'm driving the car.
Oh my God.
And in the back of my mind, he's like, I'm hearing his voice going, you don't have any ambition on being in the business. I'm thinking to myself, I take this car out, I get much, much more of a percentage of you know, opportunities for me as an actor in Hollywood. I could just wipe out my competition right now.
Oh my God. And did you learn anything about, I'm not so much interested in the salacious stories, but like, because you're so multifaceted in this business, you're not just an actor, you have your own production company, you have two podcasts, you have a book deal and books coming out, books that are out. What did you learn just in terms of execution in the business, or how to sort of, as you mentioned, it's impossible to get a movie made or really anything made in Hollywood because it's just a complicated business. Was there anything that you took away from it that stands out?
Well, the main thing, the sort of overall view of it all, and it gets back to what our kids learn and everything, and you learn this, is you're around, I mean, you're working with the best in the business, right? Mm-hmm. And these were the best and most successful people in the business. And I realized they're just like anyone else, except they get it done. You know, a lot of people in our business, they'll come up with an idea. How many times does a friend, because of the position that you're in, go, I've got a great idea for a show. I got a great idea for a movie. And it's going to fizzle. It's just 90% of the time. I don't even want to say 99 because I have a lot of friends that do stuff. Mm. But you just have to persist. You got to find those ideas, focus in on the ones, and then make them happen. And I saw that. I was able to work with, you know, for Joel, I was his driver for a year. And so I did get to see a couple of ideas go from initial concept to at least getting into pre-production. Because, you know, films and projects take a very long time. But yeah, that was the main thing. I mean, when I go up to Stallone's house and take Joel for a screening, private screening at Sylvester Stallone's house. Mm-hmm. And he goes, hey, why don't you come on inside? You look like you're hungry. Come on. And I go inside, and he goes, and literally I find myself standing in the kitchen, Stallone's kitchen, with Joel and Sylvester Stallone, and Sly says to me, hey, what do you want, a tuna sandwich? And he makes me a tuna fish, a tuna salad sandwich. Yes. And I'm talking about like, You want onions? You want tomatoes? What do you want? And I wasn't going to, I didn't say no to anything. So I had like literally the most dense, filled tuna salad.
You want a tomato, onion, and shoe polish? Sure, shoe polish would be great. Big exactly. Shoe polish fan. But the thing that you mentioned.
Yeah, I'm going to put a lot of eggs in here. I hope you don't mind.
You know, they've been good for me for my career. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But, you know, you're right. You're right about sort of they do want to be normal people. I had Paul McCartney on the podcast, and I'm not bragging. And I met him, and I just met him, and we started talking. And all we did was talk about our lives and having kids and what it's like raising kids and this and that and the other thing. And I never asked him for a photograph, or I never asked him for an autograph. And then I asked him to do my show, and he said, yeah, like, right, just like that. Like, said, yeah. And I think later I found out, like, you know, I was probably – one of the few people that didn't want something from him in terms of like, hey, I'm going to take your picture and I'm going to send it to everybody, whatever. And I do think they want to be normal. But, you know, you mentioned a good thing about Joel and, you know, 90% of the time things don't get made. I think you have to be, whether you're an actor in front of the camera, behind the camera, a producer, writer, director, you have to be a creator, but then a problem solver too, right? Because we come up with these ideas and they hit a wall and you got to get around the wall or through the wall or why isn't this working or why aren't people grabbing onto this? Yeah. And that must, for all of the things that you've been doing, I'm sure that that's an important skill set that you have now.
It is. And then out of that, you learn very quickly to blame other people. It's never my fault.
You know, I thought you were a scumbag when I got on the phone with you.
I mean, look, there's that famous line. I don't know who said it, but it's like, if you want an actor to complain, give him a job.
You know, I never heard that. That's hilarious.
Oh, my God. That's all it is. I mean, yeah. I get on the set. I know how lucky I am. I treasure every single day. That's one of the things I've learned, you know, going through this, what I call the epilepsy car wash with our son and other things in my life. I mean, how many friends have you had that have dropped dead? You know, it's like, I'm 53, dude. This is the time in my life when you either stay in shape or stuff happens and either people that are in, I mean, Kevin Smith and I had a TV show together, and all of a sudden Kevin had this major widowmaker heart attack, and thank God he survived. Mm-hmm. You see it all around you. You just treasure every single day, you know, and it's I don't even know why I brought that up, but I'm you know, it's something that's it's in my mind.
Because you're thinking like a 90-year-old man now, but that's okay. We still love you. I want to get into the epilepsy thing. I just want to ask you one question about Star Wars. And you mentioned when you were a kid growing up, and you know the next installment's coming out in November. Your character is in it, obviously. A couple of things. I know actors tend to do sort of backstories for themselves in prepping for a role. Is it hard to do that for a Star Wars character because it's such an obscure world, or do you do that at all? So how did you, you know?
No, the thing is, you know, where do you research? What do you do?
Right.
And it's not, I don't do that much research. I mean, if you watch my acting, I know my limits. I'm always kind of the best friend. I'm always that. I mean, of late, I've played the heavy, and it's not just because of my weight. It's like, you know, it's the unexpected, you know, guy that's responsible for some of the most evil stuff in these movies. And I'm having fun doing that stuff. But how do you prepare to be an X-Wing pilot? How do you prepare? And I think what it is just kind of getting into that mindset that this is just normal. It's like, you know, how a brain surgeon, you know, cranks heavy metal music while they're operating. It's just, it's a job. This is what we do. The problem with these movies is, and you know, Heroes was this way. Every single scene, every situation that you show us in, it's the end of the world. So you have to have this kind of, I've been here before. This is a routine for me. And if we don't, if we fuck this up, the planet is going to explode or these people. So it's, You're right on the edge. And so there, JJ's so brilliant when he directs. He's always like right before, you know, he gives a direction, lays out the scene, everything. And then you'll hear energy, energy, energy. And I don't even care if it's the most intimate, smallest moment. It's amazing. That's one of the things I've learned from him. And it's so simple, but just stay focused, stay, you know, even in the softest of smallest moments, stay present, stay alert, because, you know, a scene can just absolutely die with the eyes, with blinking, with looking away. Yeah. You know, stay focused, stay important. It's important. What you're doing is important. Like right now, I'm talking to you. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not just diverting and
right.
going off here.
Right.
We're focused. We're having a great conversation. So
right.
it's that type of thing. But as a character like that, this is what we do. It's
yeah.
military. It's, you yeah. know, and I know that's weird, but that's kind of in the back of my mind. Other than that, the preparation is mainly the camaraderie of X-Wing pilots, and we're all, you know, the resistance.
Right.
Kind of, you know, like taking, like rolling your eyes. Don't be afraid to roll your eyes at somebody's comment, even when you're planning a big attack. I mean, this is something that we do every day, you know.
Right. As opposed to then, because if you don't play it that way, then you're going to be playing it too big and over the top. And if you start, you know, oh my God, it's the end of the world. And it's just going to feel very stilted and staged, right?
Or the other side of it, which JJ caught me and I caught him, is I'm slack-jawed. I'm sitting there with Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher and you know, I got R2-D2, C-3PO, Chewbacca. Mm. There's a moment in The Force Awakens where we're all standing around, and you've got, you know, John Boyega and Oscar Isaac, and they're all Daisy. We're all like coming up with the strategy, and I'm running the whole thing, and I'm looking at this fake, you know, kind of thing in front of, and I've got to lay out the plan, and I'm sitting there looking at Harrison Ford, and it's like I'm watching the movie. I mean, I was like, what the fuck? What am I doing? I was a kid watching this. When I was a kid, and now I'm here.
Oh my God. That's
and the first
great.
Take, I mean, I've talked about this before, but the first take, JJ walks up to me and goes, dude, you're watching the movie. Get into the scene. You know, and right in front of everyone, I'm like, yeah, but this Han Solo right here. And he laughs, whatever, and then we get it done, you know. But
yeah. But it's better to own the moment. When you say JJ starts to scene energy, regardless if it's a big scene, a fight scene, or an intimate scene, what is he saying there when he says that? In other words, sort of, what is he trying to get out of you as an actor in that moment when he leads you into the scene that way?
Just stay present.
Got it.
Stay present. React. You know, I mean, this is what I'm taking from it.
Right.
He gets the best performances. My son, one of my boys, just asked me, they were like, who do you think is the best director in Hollywood? And you know, and of course I look at, you know, I mean, I've worked with some of the best. I really have been so lucky. I just worked with Barry Levinson, like I said, and
I know Barry Levinson. He's partners with Tom Fontana, and I'm really good friends with Tom Fontana. Yeah,
he directed Paterno, and like, he's incredible. Matt Reeves, who I've known forever, incredible.
Mm.
The Coen brothers I've worked with. What's his name? Albert Brooks. I mean, I've worked with some really incredible people. JJ, to me, and it's not just because he's my best friend and I've known him since we were five, he is, in my opinion, just the greatest. Everybody trusts him. There's a director, Lawrence Trilling, Larry Trilling, same mm-hmm. thing. Like, you get on the set and you know if the director is confident and has done his homework, her homework, and they know what they're doing, and they're like, all right, so here's what we're doing. It doesn't even have to be like, all right, everybody. It's not that. It's a confidence in, all right, I've been here before. Here's how we're doing it. Let's try it.
Yeah.
They're amenable. They're able to kind of roll with an actor going, you know, I don't feel like I'd walk over here. I wanted to. It's just this. It's hard to explain, but you're a personality wrangler. You're a stand-up comedian. You're a
psychologist. Yeah, you're all of these. You're a mother. You're a brother. You're a father.
Yeah,
you're
and a
brother,
technical expertise in the visual side of it. It's everything. And JJ just has that. He just knows how to make everyone comfortable and feel like, okay, well, if he and like I have one audience member to satisfy when I'm acting, and that's the director.
Mm.
You know, if the crew laughs, it's kind of a hat on a hat, right?
Like, yeah.
You know, just say the line the way it was written. The writers have spent so much time going over these lines, saying them in the writer's room. Don't, you know, throw that out. Just don't go, ah. I learned many years ago, I heard about this, but I was on NYPD Blue, and, you know, there's David Milch, one of the best writers ever, and there was an actor on something, and he said, my character wouldn't say this. And the director was like, all right, well, let's get David down here. So Milch comes down to the set, walks on the set and goes, "What's the problem? What's going on?" And the actor goes, "Well, look, I mean, just I my character wouldn't say this." And Milch goes, "Let me see." And he looks at the script and he goes, "Yeah, he would. It's right there." right there on the stick. I mean, it's like, say the fucking words, dude.
Get over yourself. Yeah, you know, you mentioned that thing about the trust of the director and just how... I've been working with Frank Oz. I'm doing this one man show, and he's been working with me on it. And we may be trying to take it to TV now. And he has that same vibe of he's very giving, and he creates a very nice environment. But when he knows what he wants, he knows what he wants. And when he wants it, he knows what he wants, and you know it. And in other words, like he's firmly in control, but not to the point where like he's scaring the shit out of anybody. And then he also is, and I'm sure JJ's like this too. I think the best directors are they don't miss anything. They're so meticulous. The least little thing they catch, which he would catch. He'd catch me in a moment going, you're not doing that. You're wrong. It's not feeling right there. Or even looking at our set and like that doesn't feel like little things that you think you don't even think about it. And then it was funny because I thought the same thing when they were like, man, this guy's got like, he's wearing like 7 hats doing this job as a director, but they create that such a great environment of creativity. Did you grow up with JJ in LA? Is that, you guys know each other from like literally like in a neighborhood together? Or is it, how did you guys?
You know? Yeah, we went to elementary school together at Roskimer Road Elementary School. And back then, you know, JJ was into, we were both into everything, you know, creative, and we were kind of the nerds, and he was making films back then. He was making the 16mm films and editing them, and I was starring in all of those. So like we were on Kimmel and they played a clip from one of the old movies where I'm like 10. And JJ made the film when he was 10, and it was, you know, really little stupid little thing, but I was 12 or something. And he goes, was that Greg? Is that, and then, you know, it's gone back that far. And the fact that we're still doing this to this day, and you know, for me, I'm lucky. I mean, I'm the one that's really, first of all, I'm lucky to have him as a friend, but secondly, as an actor, you know, I'm not just an actor. I'm like you, you know, we're creating stuff and trying to, you know, whatever, be proactive, but as an actor, like strictly an actor, you're waiting for people to say, oh, Greg would be perfect for this role, or man, Paul could kill this, whatever.
Right.
So, you know, you hope that the people you work with want to work with you again. And then, and that's what's happened with JJ. We're friends first, but then he's always been like, I just think you'd be great in this. He's not doing me any favors. I'm not doing him any favors. We love working together.
And you're good. I mean, you know, don't take anything away from yourself. I mean, I don't think you're good, but a lot of people think you're good at what you do.
I am. Come on, let's be honest. The best actor in Hollywood. There's no around it. I mean, say it.
I was saying to my wife earlier, I'm interviewing the best actor in Hollywood.
I appreciate that.
So she said Bradley Cooper, and I'm like, come on, man.
No, come on. What are you doing?
I want to talk about the epilepsy foundation that you have and the work that you're doing. Now, my grandmother had it, and I remember as a kid, you know, just she would go into seizures. And the first time I saw it, it was like, oh, that really freaked me out. And I thought she almost died and was going to die. And my cousin Johnny, who's probably 10 years older than we are or more, has it. But it developed in him later in life. Like, I think he might have been in his late 30s and he was driving one day and he had a seizure and then boom, went off the road. And I know your oldest son, Jake, has it. Yeah. And there's some interesting things that I've been learning and sort of learning about you. It's like 1 in 10 people have seizures. 1 in 26 have epilepsy.
Yeah.
And did this start early on with your son, or was this something that came about like my cousin later in life?
No, Jake is 23 now. And when he was 7, he started having what's called absence seizures or staring spells. We didn't know, you know, we knew nothing about epilepsy. No one in our families, both my wife and myself, no one had epilepsy or seizures. Or we didn't think. Doing some research, we learned, you know, there were some cousins way back, but Jake, as a little kid, he would like kind of zone out. He wasn't shaking. His head wasn't bobbing or anything. He would just be in the car. And you know, when your eyes look out the car window, if you look at someone's pupils, they follow and track and track and track and track. That sort of tracking things, is what I think. And the doctors have said, maybe that's what triggered it for him, but, his brain is perfectly normal. And yet he had these little staring spells where 5 seconds, he would just kind of stare for 5 seconds, we thought he was ignoring us. So we'd reprimand him. You know, I'd be like, Jay, come on, pay attention to daddy, buddy. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth would say the same thing. Then at his 7-year checkup, the doctor said, are there any issues? And he's perfectly normal. Everything's fine. We're like, yeah, he's healthy. No, there is one thing. And the doctor said, okay, Jake, I need you to hyperventilate. Jake didn't know what that was. He was like, breathe in and out, and put your head down. And he did it. And then all of a sudden he fell into this like 10-second long seizure where his head bobbed a little and he was staring at us. And then he snapped out of it. Oh. And it scared the shit out of us. We were like, what the hell is that? Like, we'd never seen it kind of present itself that way. And the doctor said, well, he's a great pediatrician. He said, I'm not a neurologist. I'm not an epileptologist, which we'd never even heard that term before. But he said, I think that's a seizure. Go see a neurologist. And that began our journey of trying to get ahead of this. And Jake is what's known as drug resistant. So the first medication works with about 75% of people that develop seizures or epilepsy. And so you take one medicine and you're going to be able to control your seizures. Well, Jake falls under that 25% that needs a combination of or other therapies as well. And that's very common, unfortunately. We're talking about millions and millions of people that are dealing with this for various reasons. And epilepsy, by the way, is defined as someone who has two or more unexplained seizures. So if you and I play football in high school and we're hitting our head, and then we develop seizures, that's explained. Okay, well, that's head trauma. That's, you know, CTE, that's something. This is something where a seizure comes out of nowhere. It isn't febrile, so it isn't from a fever. It isn't, you know, because we're diabetic. It isn't, you know, an injury. It isn't a tumor. It isn't a scar. I mean, as a parent, when you then go to the hospital and they do tests and the doctors say there's absolutely nothing wrong with your son's brain, and then he falls into a grand mal seizure, what we call tonic-clonic seizures now, it's the worst news because there is no silver bullet. There's no answer. All they say is, well, let's try the combination of these two meds. Let's try this. Let's try that. And, you know, these are powerful medications.
Yeah.
And the problem is the alternative is seizures. So you got to get ahead of it. You can't settle and say, well, I only have one seizure a month, or my son is, he has one a year. You've got to stay, and it's a constant race to stay ahead of it. So Jake right now is on, you know, a combination of a bunch of meds. And by the way, living a perfectly normal life. He has a great job. He's doing really well.
So he hasn't had seizures in a while, or
how? No, knock wood. He'll have a breakthrough seizure every so often. I call it a breakthrough seizure because he'll be doing great for a year. And then all of a sudden he'll have a seizure. And it's usually because he didn't take his meds on time or he stayed up too late. You know, there are certain triggers and it's specific to each person, but some of the most common triggers are not getting enough sleep, fatigue, stress.
Is it true about the light, the strobing light, or is that for just some people? Is that a misnomer?
No, it's not a misnomer, but it is with some people. But also, you know, there's like we were on the set of Alias once, and we did a lot of like nightclub scenes, you know, and one time it's dark. We were all working incredibly late and the lights are strobing. And one of our crew members, all of a sudden she just went down. She had a seizure and she'd never had a seizure before. And she was in her 40s. And it's like, okay, that's something that it's just the combination, all the planets lined up,
yeah.
You know? So, but with Jake, I was just going to say, you know, Jake, not only does he does Taekwondo. He's almost a second degree. He's about to test for a second degree in Taekwondo. So the workout really helps him, that adrenaline, you know, the endorphins, and he naps every day. He's very strict with his diet, so he's really on top of that. Takes his meds, but then for Jake, it's not just the meds. He needs other therapies. He's got something. It's really interesting. It's called VNS therapy. VNS.
Yeah, I was reading about that. It was approved like in '97 by the FDA, right? It's a medical device of some kind.
Yeah, but he's had it for over 10 years. This is something that has worked for him. It's right. You know, under, like right by the shoulder blade, it's implanted. It's a little bigger than like the size of a quarter. It's a little thicker. And it's got a wire that goes and connects to his vagal nerve in his neck. You can't see it, but it detects when his heart rate increases and it sends a little electronic burst into, you know, to the vagal nerve, which then goes to the brain. and it will zap a seizure. Like, so it's almost like a little guard standing by, this is the way I refer to it, inside my son. So at least, you know, there's a chance that if something, you know, it could wipe out a seizure before it actually starts.
Right.
There's a magnet that you can wave over the outside to, you know, if he starts, there's been time where Jake will have, years ago, he'll start having a seizure and I'll swipe the magnet, which will then send that pulse to the brain and he snaps out of the seizure.
Hmm.
And that to me is like, wow, magic. That's like, yeah, unbelievable.
Does it? So if he's driving, I mean, that's the one to me, like, with, and you know, my cousin is not as high functioning, for lack of a better term, as your son is. Obviously your son's leading pretty much a normal life. My cousin's like pretty much bedridden now. He really is having a very, very tough time with it. But does he worry about I understand, even if he's doing what he's supposed to be doing, he's getting his sleep, he's eating properly, et cetera, et cetera. Is there that concern for him when he's driving, or is it just sort of like, well, it just becomes part of your life and it's in the back of your mind somewhere and you're just living with it?
No, he doesn't drive. I mean, it's, you know, like I said, he, you know, with the thought that he could have one of these seizures, there's just no, he doesn't feel safe. And, yeah, you know, with Uber and Lyft now, it's like, come on, there's no reason. I mean, we do live in LA and we're spread out and it does, definitely does hinder his independence, but he, you know, he's fine. I mean, I say he's fine with it. I know he's frustrated. It's not something that's easy to deal with. I try and tell him I understand. I don't. I mean, there's no way unless you're actually living that. But he, you know, he's my hero, man. He's been through things. Talk about baseball. I'll tell you a quick story. When he was 12, he was a really good baseball player before he got, right, you know, and then the seizures started getting worse and it was really hard. But he was playing baseball and everybody knew, okay, there's a chance Jake could have a seizure, whatever. He crushes the ball and he rounds first, rounds second, goes into third, slides in, gets up. He's like, I mean, you know, you're 12. It's a huge thing, triple. Mm-hmm. He's jumping up and down on third base and he starts having a seizure. Wow. And he goes down and he's just full on seizure. I run out there, so much so that he lost bladder control. So he was like urinating in his pants, whatever, which can happen.
Yeah.
And everybody on the field, I of course don't want to disrupt the game, whatever. I'm like, hey coach, I'll take him. Whatever. I take him, my wife and I take him and we put him in the car and we drive home and it's close, you know, cause you're playing pony league ball. It's right there. And when we get, he doesn't say anything in the car. We get home. We pull into the driveway, we park, and he gets out of the car, slams the door, and runs in the house. And I look at my wife like, all right, who's going to take this? Who's going to go talk to him? I mean, this is really disappointing. Yeah. And before we actually get to the front door, he's already changed his pants and is running back to the car because he wants to go finish the game.
Wow, that's great. That's amazing.
And that was like, that doesn't come, I mean, me? I'm burying myself in Pop-Tarts.
Yeah.
I am like,
yeah.
I'm like, this is.
I hear you. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm turning the TV on and I'm not going out for 2 weeks. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know.
That's his DNA, man. That's just the way. That's, yeah, you're right. Well, I'm sure he gets it from somehow genetically from you and your wife, but
yeah,
that's a special kid right there.
Yeah. And I thank you. And so with that, we've been doing this thing, you know, I started many, many years ago called Talk About It, because there is such a stigma and it's so scary. And
yeah, it's talkaboutit.org. People can go there and donate. And yeah, there's really great videos on there. Tell us a little bit more about that.
I just felt like, what can I do to really make a dent? You know, I'm not making enough money where I can change this world. I can't give $100 million to research or whatever, but I can do what I can do. And the stigma was a big problem. I saw when I was speaking at these conferences and things, I was, you know, kind of the face, and I have been the face of epilepsy as a caregiver. And I was like, okay, I can break this barrier. I can be that sort of, you know, person that's talking about it so people don't feel like they're alone out there. Because if you don't talk about it with your friends and family, if people don't know, first of all, that's dangerous, because people need to know if someone has a seizure. There's a couple of things. Catch the person. They're not going to just flop to the ground. They're going to start having a seizure. And you have time to help them get to the ground slowly, because the fall is what's going to hurt them, and put them on their side. So if anything, if there's any fluid in their mouth, it's not going to suffocate them or choke them. It's going to come out. And then also never, ever stick anything in their mouth and put something underneath their head so their head doesn't bang on the ground and hurt. And the seizure will stop within 2 minutes most of the time. So all of that is, you know, information like that is on the website. But anyway, I was like, well, what can I do? So I enlisted the help of every one of my friends to ask a question. So like Jennifer Garner's on there saying, if you want to become pregnant or you're pregnant, can you become pregnant? And if you have epilepsy, and she freezes, and then a doctor comes on and says, of course you can. And here's what you need to learn. And so it's all the questions you want asked and answered, and celebrities to kind of, you know, coax you into getting there and feeling like, all right, this is normal. This isn't something that we need to be scared of. It's scary, but having seen thousands of them as a parent, I know this is something that everybody's got something. Yeah. So this is something that we're dealing with. And just to plug what's going on right now, I'm doing a huge fundraiser. I'm doing a bunch of campaigns on Omaze, which is this great organization. They raise money for different causes, and they did a thing with Star Wars. We're doing a thing with Star Wars this year as well. But right now, if you go on omaze.com, omaze.com/Jen, you'll be able to get the chance to come out to Los Angeles, stay at a great swanky hotel, and bake cookies, chocolate chip cookies with Jennifer Garner. And she's been kind enough to say, yeah, I'll do that. And it's already raising a ton of money. And we're doing that with, I'm going after everybody I've already worked with. So like, you know, you can imagine all the people from Heroes, and that I'm going after, you know, Star Is Born people.
Why don't you do this? Why don't you have somebody come out for the right amount of money donated and have a tuna, make a tuna fish sandwich with Sylvester Stallone? Come on, huh?
That's good. I like that. Chase a chicken with Sly Stallone. That would be the best. Oh my God.
If you put that online, that would go viral in like two seconds. Like,
oh my God. That would be incredible. I got to get a hold of Sly. Listen,
I'm going to give you that idea. I like you. You know, we got a lot in common. I'm just going to give that to you. Go for it. By the way, undertreated epilepsy, I was reading about this. There's a lot that comes with that. It's depression, anxiety, developmental issues, changes with thinking and memory, issues with social interactions. And so it's important, I'm sure, that you're telling people as well that if you think that there's a problem, go deal with it. Don't just sort of sweep it under the rug, right?
Yeah. And also, people get misdiagnosed a lot. You know, this is the brain, dude. This is something where if somebody that you know has these spouts or these episodes of dark, dark depression or anger, or they lash out and they can't control it, and they're just, you're like, really mean for whatever reason, and you just go, dude, this is so out of character of you. Yeah. That might be a seizure. Seizures also present themselves as like tics, or, you know, sudden, just like a sudden drop, or, you know, these are things that it's not normal. And you need to check them out. The brain is fascinating, and it's complex and confusing and frustrating, but it's something that we do know more and more about all the time. Epilepsy.com is the Epilepsy Foundation of America. That's the website. So go to epilepsy.com, start there. My foundation is I gave that under the control of the Epilepsy Foundation is talkaboutit.org. So you can go to either one, but Epilepsy.com is one of the first places to start. There's such a wealth of resource material there. Plus, if you need, you know, a lot of people don't know where to go in their area. They've never heard of an epileptologist, which is a neurologist that specializes in epilepsy. They don't know about VNS therapy. They don't know about CBD. They don't know about all the stuff that they're kind of hearing about, but is it right for them? None of this stuff should be tried or started or, you know, anything without a doctor's care. You have to be under a doctor's care. You can't do this yourself. And so start by finding the best epileptologist in your area and then go from there.
Yeah, it's an interesting stat here. The epilepsy is the fourth most common neurological disorder behind migraine, stroke, and Alzheimer's. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And it affects 3.5 million people in America and 65 million people worldwide. So I think it's great that you're drawing attention to it. And, it's not easy, you know, being a parent and a dad and a driver for Joel Silver and all of these other things that you do.
Hey, look, the other thing is, you know, it's not just a condition that you have to deal with on a daily basis. That's hard enough. This is a killer. Epilepsy kills. We have an example of that in the most tragic situation ever with a brilliant actor and a wonderful, wonderful person, Cameron Boyce.
Yeah.
Disney actor just died in his sleep having a seizure. And this is something that as a parent or a person with epilepsy or, you know, a husband, a wife, brother, sister, whatever you are, and you're touched by epilepsy, you fear this. Just the way children, this is the way I equate it, but the way, you know, you've heard of SIDS with little babies where they suddenly just die in their sleep because they're suffocated on the pillow or whatever. If someone has a seizure in their sleep and we don't know and they don't breathe or the brain tells the heart to stop working or whatever is going on, it's terrifying. You must get your seizures under control.
Yeah.
And you have to get a good night's sleep because think about it. If you don't go into REM sleep, if you don't, if you're having seizures in your sleep, you're not able to get that deep sleep that we all need. And because of that, it results in, you know, you're stressed or you're fatigued the next day and lack of sleep can cause seizures. So it's a vicious cycle. I don't know what exactly happened with this beautiful, beautiful person, Cameron Boyce, but it is such a tragedy. It's so, I so can't even imagine.
It's terrible. Yeah.
It's but it's
terrible.
In the back of my mind. Every time I say goodnight to my son, I'm like, please, God, don't let him, you know, anything happen to him.
Yeah,
let him get a good night's sleep. And so we have to find a cure. We have to do what we can. So,
well, people need to go to omaz.com, omaz.com/Jen.
omaze.com/Jen.
Okay. omaze.com/Jen. And also talkaboutit.org and epilepsy.com. And, learn more about it and be part of the solution. And it's great that you're doing that. And it's really great talking to you. Hey, by the way, I had a quick question for you that just popped in my head. You're in Castle Rock, which is like, you know, this sort of psychological horror thriller. And then you're in, you know, a completely different animal in Star Wars. How much as an actor does the genre inform your performance? Because obviously the character is the character and you have to live out as a character in a set of circumstances that you're given by the script. But does the genre itself, they're so different. Do you find you have to approach things differently or does it, how does your acting play out in this situation?
Yeah, I mean, look, one of the first jobs I ever got was on Felicity, you know, thanks to Matt Reeves and J.J. Abrams, right? So I get on the set and the show hadn't aired yet. So I didn't know exactly the tone of what's going on. You know, there's certain friends outside of the business, certain friends like you and I hang out at a bar or a party or something, and it's like, that's the tone, right?
And then
the genre dictates exactly how people talk to each other. So I was on Felicity, and my first line, I come downstairs, and I'm like, hey, what's going on? Somebody stole my idea book. And JJ walks up to me and goes, dude, you're on a completely different show right now. So, you know, so yeah. Castle Rock, you've got to, and I was fortunate in that it had already been on for one season before I did my 5 episodes this season. So I'm like, you know, I can watch that show and see how, you know, what the tone of it and the levels of it. And so Star Wars, same thing. You just, it does inform how, you know, how you can, you know, approach the lines and the dog and the scenes and whatever. But that's up to the director, dude. That's, you know, you and I show up and we're like, comedy guy, let's figure
right,
it out.
Right, exactly. All right, you go stand over there and don't act like an idiot. And I'll tell you, exactly. There's so much I want to talk to you about because you've also got your production company. You've got an app. You've got books. But let's do this again and have you come back on and we can, you know, plug all the epilepsy stuff too. But the most important thing right now, talkaboutit.org, epilepsy.com, omaze.com/Jen. Go help you know, us figure out what's going on with epilepsy, how we can beat it and all of that. And it's great to have you on, man.
I'm going to ask you on your show if you'll come on my show. I have 2 podcasts. Mm-hmm. One is called Talk About It, which makes sense, and that's all about the epilepsy world and people that are touched by the epilepsy world. Mm-hmm. And then the other is called Corner Stories, which is a small business podcast. I'm fascinated by the people that literally drop everything. And I say it in the opening, I'm like, these people would rather, you know, instead of a 9-to-5 job for someone else, they'd rather work 24/7 for themselves. And so I, I love you to come on to talk about a podcast, talk about your grandmother, talk about people in your family, and also...
Well, yeah, listen, I grew up in a family furniture business. My mother started it in 1960 when Italian mothers living in a tenement house didn't go to work, let alone start their own business. And I essentially started my own business. I was on Wall Street as a lawyer and investment banker doing M&A deals, and I quit to go into comedy. And so...
We got to talk.
This is really in my wheelhouse. And my mother is 91 and still running the business. She's a colossal pain in the ass. She will not go down. She will not go down. We try everything. Bad milk. We trip her. She bounces. No. But
I love it. The
small business thing is, that was our existence growing up, man. You worked in the business, and yeah, I would love it, man. That'd be awesome. So let's do that.
Oh, yeah. You know, can you do me a favor and check out Corner Stores? You're going to love it.
Okay,
love
cool.
Love it, love it, love it. Listen to Serial Killer, the episode Serial Killer, all about the Serial Killer Cafe in London, and now they have 5 locations. It's a place where you go and you just, they only serve cereals. It's amazing.
That's awesome.
I mean, all the episodes are great, but I'd love, let's do that for sure.
Okay. All right, cool. Good. Best of luck with all the acting projects. We'll keep an eye out for Star Wars in November. Hope that franchise really takes off and starts to make some money for some people.
It might.
It's great to have you on, man. It's really great to have a new friend, too. Greg Grunberg, everybody.
Thanks, man. You're the best.
All right, there you go. Greg Grunberg, cool guy. Really super nice guy. And I think he and I are going to be pals down the road. All right. Go to at Paul Mercurio on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and give us a follow. And as always, thank you for listening to the podcast, and tell your friends about it and share the links. Always want to keep building those followers. Thanks, everybody.